Good morning. The first thing I want to say is to give praise and respect to Rowena Moore. How many people in this room know who Rowena Moore is? Well, everybody's hand ought to go up, because that's a sister whose family, as it turned out, owned property where Malcolm's family lived when he was born. And she was a militant trade unionist. She was a person really inspired by that, and began to collect information. And from her work, we now have the Malcolm X Foundation here, which is an organization everyone here should support. And I think it's very important to remember people who have made a contribution. In fact, we're the only people who can remember each other. And in remembering each other, I'm going to talk about memory a little bit, but in remembering each other, we can then seek to continue the good works that are present in the lives of really of most of us. And it's that kind of relay race through history that we have to constantly remind ourselves is essential. As my man said, we're going to do a little bit of with the computer here. That's my thing. It's your thing too, isn't it? We live in an age of change, so everybody here knows about the computer and knows about the internet and so on. What we need to reflect on is how these machines can be used. The next person I want to remember is Robert Christman. It's a treat for Robert Christman to be here. You'll learn that over the years, and so I just want to mention that. There's several of us who are from the same generation, we even look alike, but you know, and anyway, it's a real treat for you to have a veteran here who can share many things with you. Now let me see what I got here. I'm first going to do a little PowerPoint, if this will work. Yeah. Okay. That's what I'm talking about, the Remembering Malcolm X. The future is cyber resurrection. Okay, just let that sink in for a moment. All right. First, I want to talk about what time it is, and I'm going to talk about how the e-reality, e-commerce, you know, how the e-reality is impacting Black studies. And then I want to talk about that in relation to what we're doing and so on, and then I want to talk about how all of this connects to Malcolm. First thing is that we know that we live in a new moment, and there are many ways to conceptualize history. One way to conceptualize history is to think of the tools that are used and how humans organize themselves in order to do what? To produce food, clothing, and shelter, to share these things, and to live in communities, which had to do with how many people could live there and how long your life would be, and so on. And we've come a long way. So first, there was this, I mean, people were hunters and gatherers. I mean, you know, you had to go out and scrape around and dig and eat a root or snatch an apple off a tree or however it was working. But the point is that the tools you had were your hands and your feet, your eyes and your ears. And with the agricultural revolution, what you had was the development of technology that enabled communities to domesticate plants and animals. I mean, that's the main idea, and therefore you could produce greater food, therefore people could lead different lives. The world changed. Well, this took thousands of years to develop. The next major revolution was the Industrial Revolution, which we're much more familiar with the development of tools, complex tools, that enabled people to form factories, to work together in large groups, to produce very complex things. I mean, Omaha is a place that was greatly impacted by the Industrial Revolution, and both in terms of manufacturing, but also in terms of today, in more recent history, meatpacking is a reflection of the way in which it developed, the Industrial Revolution. And now, of course, we live in the age of the information revolution, or a new technology, and it goes by many names, but let's just for the moment call it the information revolution. Now here you can see some of the factors involved in this transformation. The main thing is that what we're talking about is a fundamental transformation. See, many of us in the 1960s thought we were making a revolution, but we weren't. We were transforming the society in many ways. There were a lot of things happening. Now we're living in a revolution, and people don't act like they know it. You know, and I was really, I mean, I was depressed. 60s were over. We didn't win. You know, it was really, I had an attitude for some years, you know. But the point is I didn't retreat into becoming a gourmet cook, as many of my colleagues did, although I love good food. The point is that when we held on, here came the revolution. Now we got to figure out what to do in it. And when I say revolution, I'm talking about fundamental restructuring of the institutional life, the ecology of life, the stratification of life, and modes of thought. It's all new. So, if it's new, then we can get in the game and we can begin to determine which way it's going to go. In other words, technology up to a certain point, like TV, turned people into couch potatoes. Right? Even people in high school, laid up with potato chips and whatever the latest thing is, watching TV. This is the new game. Now suddenly the technology flips the script and we become what? Active, involved. Although many people don't think you're active and involved when you're sitting in front of the terminal, but you are. Okay, so now this technology, this point enables us now to read back in time and reconceptualize history. So we can think, for example, of information technology being the basis to read black history in a new way. So for example, if you think of these modes of experience and think about, well, what were the communication technologies that were used during each of these modes? And obviously these are cumulative and overlapping, right? And then what use was made by certain figures who in some way are a personification of the struggle that took place during these historical moments? I'm just putting this here to show you that there is a new way to rethink all of what we thought we knew once innovation occurs. In other words, you have to reread history on the basis of new development. Every generation has to do it anyway. This is the basis on which we have to do it now. But, you know, that old ugly ogre that we've been talking about so far raises its head, racism, the polarity of classes, poor people, and so on and so on. So we now, in this information society, we have this new concept called the digital divide. So old inequalities become transformed and represent themselves in a new society. So we have information society, we have information-rich institutions like the University of Nebraska at Omaha, and yet in Omaha, as in every other city, there are sectors of the community that are not online, have never been online, and so on and so forth. So this is a serious, very serious and fundamental issue. This happens to be a book about South Africa, about the use of information technology in institutions of higher education in South Africa. But I thought the graphic was dynamite. Now, in order to give us an orientation toward information society, I'd like to share with you the three values that we consider to be fundamental. First is cyber democracy, everybody connected. It's sort of like literacy. It's sort of like knowing how to read and write. Everybody ought to know how to read and write. Everybody ought to have access to this technology, a computer, and to get online. Of course, we have a great tradition in this country with the Carnegie Library. Books were available to everybody. We now have to figure out how computers can be made available as well. The second point is collective intelligence. This is a very key point because up to now, I mean collective intelligence, up to now it's been selective intelligence, and the problem is that most people haven't been able to do any of the selecting. It's sort of like knowledge has been like TV. Whether it's 5 channels or 50 channels, the point is somebody else decides on the choices, then you come in and choose among the choices that are available to you. But what happens if you want, and that's whether it's 500 channels, whatever it is. The point is, how do you become a producer of knowledge and create the options that are then available to everybody else? Why is somebody else's point of view more important than yours? Increasingly, this is a question that we can answer in a democratic fashion because of the technology. Question is, do we have the will? So collective intelligence, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. And then the last, information freedom. In other words, if everybody's online, and everybody's going to be online, that's a done deal, okay? That's like go to the grocery store and try to buy something and say, I don't want a computer to be involved in this purchase. You know, that just isn't going to work. Point is that collective intelligence is a critical issue, and information freedom is even more so because knowledge is a commodity. And the question is, if you didn't have free public libraries, then would books be available to the people? And if information is migrating to the web, and we have the web as a proprietary environment, then we got trouble. Because then that means all of knowledge fits classes. If you're rich, you can buy the knowledge. If you're poor, forget it. Get some Twinkies or something. Okay? So, in other words, a really good nutritional meal. So you've got these three values. Now, at the University of Toledo, when it comes to how this connects to black studies, this is our approach. Now, there are 5 conventional areas of work in any academic program. And then black studies essentially took these things and we, when we started black studies in the 60s, got involved. These are the ways in which we're suggesting the e-black studies will transform conventional academic activity in the context of the information society. And these are the things that we're doing at Toledo as our particular application. In other words, we are participating in listservs and running a listserv. We are not only teaching face-to-face in the classroom, but using distance learning, and so on. Okay. The HFROM list that I spoke about, I want to mention this because this is a new way that academic work is being done. Right now, many of you, you're in high school, and you look around, and I'm sure there are many students in Omaha, look around and say, I got to get out of Omaha. I'm going to Chicago or New York, or I'm going where the action is. Okay? That's what they're saying in Toledo. I don't know if they're saying it in Omaha, but they're definitely saying it in Toledo. And the thing is, you feel kind of isolated. Well, lists in academic work are how people find each other, even though they may be in a relatively small group. So the colleagues that you need to feed you, and you need to feed them with your ideas, are available on these lists. And this is a fantastic thing that you really ought to become more involved with. The key is that these discussion lists, email that goes back and forth, are all archived into logs. So that, for example, take these are the messages of a particular month, a year ago. Here are the people who sent them, and these are the questions, their questions and their answers. And I mean detailed information. So there, for example, there's a listserv on Malcolm X. And you can send, if you have a question, send it in, and somebody from somewhere will answer you.